My name is Sibu Zikode. I am a disciplined member of Abahlali baseMjondolo, the Shack Dwellers Movement, that began in 2005 from one of the shanty towns of Kennedy Road in Durban. Abahlali means residents, baseMjondolo living in the shacks. So we thought we should not hunt for any good or fancy names, but let's call a spade. These are the residents who are living in the shacks and who are proud to be living there, because a person is a person wherever they find themselves. We are a person whether we are poor, we are the person whether we are homeless, we are a person whether we are living on the other side of the sea, and our personality is only complete when there's people around us. So we talk about humanity, that housing is a human right, is a basic human right. So I don't think there's any much debate about it. So the organization's objective has been, and it is, to fight, protect, promote, and advance the interests of the shack dwellers and the poor in South Africa. We are doing that, and we've been doing that, and we continue to do that task. Shanty towns, like most shanty towns elsewhere in the world, there is hardly any water, hardly any sanitation, there's hardly any road access, there's hardly any refuse collections, and there is no electricity. As a result, people will have to use candles, paraffin stoves, which are often explosive, and people will be burned to death in these shanty towns. So there's fires after fires because of the materials that people have to use to build these shanty towns. We've lost lives of many people. We've lost lives of our children who were burned to death in these shanty towns. Housing and land in South Africa are political questions. They are very sensitive. So the new black-led, said to be a democratic government, has come up with new policies that try to chase poor people away from the cities. So if you are poor, you have no place in our cities. If you are unemployed, you have no home. It is your own fault. It is crime. Unfortunately, our organization had to deal with that. When we started organizing, we had to define ourselves. And we said, this is who we are, this is where we are, this is what we want, and this is how we want it, what we want. So organizing has not been easy. And I must say that there were no clever few people who sat down and thought of building a movement. There was no intellectual thinking around building a movement. Promises were made, promises were broken. The Kennedy Road informal settlement was promised one of the piece of lands, which is said to be a prime land. 2 weeks down the line, the very same land promised for what they call as public housing, the state-assisted housing, was sold to a private person who was going to build a commercial brick yard. And out of that, again, without planning, we had to blockade the road. We had to demand the truth to be told to us. We had to demand the authorities to come and explain an account to us, because that piece of land was promised to us. Within 2 weeks, that promise was broken. We had no other choice. We had to blockade the road. The traffic was forced to come to a standstill. And 14 people were arrested. And again, a day after, we had to organize another march, because the 14 people who were arrested were charged with public violence. And we were asking ourselves, which public? because we are the public. So it's either you arrest us all or release them. Those were our simple demands. Release them or arrest us all, because we are the public in which our comrades were said to be making nonsense against. And again, that protest was fired with rubber bullet. We were dispersed. And in prison, people were tortured. They were beaten with dogs. We had to try other means of dealing with this repression. That was in the early stage of building this movement. And again, many shack settlements around the city of Durban had to join us, not to support us, but they thought that it was high time that their voice are also heard. So we were used as license for other shack dwellers to actually express their dissatisfaction around the promises that were made, around the promises that were broken. And the movement was born. When the movement was born, obviously the suffering has brought us together. We were able to define ourselves, obviously, as the people that do not count in our society, people who have no place in our cities. Yet, South Africa cities are said to be world-class cities, and they continue to build these world-class cities, which means there will be cities without slums, cities without poverty. And we had to fight so hard to be incorporated, to be integrated into those world-class cities. And we believe that world-class cities will be cities where everyone is treated with respect and dignity. And we believe that cities have to be shared amongst those who live in those cities, irregardless of their color, creed, gender, religion, age, and so on. And again, we had to fight so much to be part of these world-class cities. Each second, each minute, each hour, we had to suffer. And the very suffering has made us very strong. Out of all these conditions in which we have to suffer, at least we appreciate that at least we are able to occupy lands, mostly well-located lands that are in the cities, that are closer to the working conditions, that are closer to education, to health facilities, and so on. In South Africa, we do not waste time. Any prime land that is vacant, we don't invade land, but we occupy. We waste no time. We don't wait for those homes. And we have waited for so long for the promises that are always made when the elections are to come. And we came to a stage where we said, enough is enough. We've taken an oath, we've taken a position. We've taken a stand that not again shall we allow any injustices. It has not been an easy choice to make, but we had to be responsible. We had to make sure that each one of us who suffer the very same injustices are organized with us. And when we are together, we are very strong. When we are together, we can shake the walls of Durban and other cities in South Africa. When we are together, we are very powerful. We have learned, and it has worked for us. Doing all this organizing, doing all the political work, again, it has not been easy. But again, we thought that we need food. Right now, we need to identify our enemies right now. We did identify our enemies, and we know who our enemies are. We do not talk much about the bigger picture. At least we know who our enemies are. We've done a number of projects of self-help. We've had preschools to look after our children. We've run HIV and AIDS projects to take care of our sick people. We've identified orphans. Bread is my witness. We've run feeding schemes in our communities. We've had volunteers who will go door to door, help those families who cannot help themselves, wash them, provide medication for them, do the referrals for them to, you know, to clinics, to home affairs, and so on. We've worked with social workers. Unfortunately, some of the state departments, like the Department of Health, Department of Social Development, funded those projects. We have managed to secure some services in some of these settlements. Mind you, a shantytown like Kennedy Road with about 10,000 people would have to share 5 water standpipes. 10,000 people will have to queue up for only these 5 communal water standpipes with 6 portable toilets, and people have to wait in these toilets. Mind you, it's a shantytown. The HIV and AIDS rate is very high. People have running stomach. At least God has created also the bushes. You know, some people have to help themselves in the nearby bushes. And what happened to the women when they have to help themselves? They will be raped. It's been us, as ordinary people, as the people that do not count, that had to take care of those situations. We've managed to deal with that. Where there is no water, we've managed to connect water for ourselves. We did not steal water, and we do not steal water because water is a gift from God. So we connect water. With electricity, people have been burned to death. So we are not going to wait for any kingdom to come. Again, we connect electricity by force sometimes. When we take our place in our cities, sometimes we take our place humble but very firm. It has been our responsibility as an organization of the shack dwellers to make sure that we keep our children safe, we look after our elderly, we look after our sick people. We've been very strong in doing that. We've done it successful. When we began in 2005, we thought we would partner the government because we are organized. So it would be easy for the government to deal with the organized groups. But as we continue to organize and mobilize, we became the greatest threat to power. Suddenly, the authorities were saying, hey, these folks are running their own authorities. That is the situation one will have to face when you have to organize outside the state control. There's a considerable price that one may have to pay. Because we've been organizing outside the state control, our government was saying, you folks are running your own authorities. It is our job as the state to think for you, represent you, take decision on your behalf. Who the hell do you think you are? So when you raise any question, who the hell do you think you are? Then we had to define ourselves before someone else, from somewhere else, define us. That has kept us together. We have suffered so much, but we have learned so much. We continue to work together under those difficult situations. Now the movement has grown up into a national movement that has shaken the walls of Pretoria, the walls of Durban, the walls of Cape Town. It has not been easy. Now the government is not happy. We have challenged policies. We have challenged legislations that were aiming at legitimizing evictions. New legislations that were contrary to the Constitution. A hard-won democracy. A hard-won Constitution. We had to continue from the work of Nelson Mandela. We had to continue from the works of Steve Biko, Mahatma Gandhi, you name them. Because those folks who took over from Nelson Mandela have no idea, no interest of what the Freedom Charter looks like, of what the Constitution looks like. It's those piece of good documents that are kept in those shelves. It's been our duty to God and to our country to make sure that everyone is treated with respect and dignity. It is our duty that we have to be tested, if we mean what we say. Unfortunately, we had to practice and we had to walk the talk. So we've challenged the KwaZulu-Natal government to the highest court of our land. Again, you dirty shanty towns, who do you think you are that you can challenge the government's policies and legislation to the highest court of our land? So we had to pay a price. That on the 26th, 27th of September 2009, the state, the ruling party, the African National Congress, in which some of you had supported so much and continue to think that South Africa is perfect, it is the very same government led by the black majority that has turned South Africa into a state of the past. Same laws of the past are now brought in. We had no choice but to fight for that. So the state has been very smart to remote and buy some people to conduct this attack so that it is look like as a criminal element that these poor folks are fighting one another. And we've been warning that the anger of the poor can go in many directions. And we continue to warn even here that we should not allow our anger to be turned against our fellow brothers and sisters. No matter how confused we are, the anger of the poor can go in many directions. Because some of the states have offered us money to buy our struggle, to depoliticize our activism, to no success. The last resort they had was to physically attack us. So as I speak, we have been forced out of our settlements. We have become refugees in our own country, in our own province, in our own cities, in our own settlements, in our own families. We've become refugees. Again, we had to go underground. In this country of a rainbow nation with government of national unity, where 11 official languages are spoken, what a nation. I am the living evidence. Obviously, I am here because I've been entrusted by my fellow comrades to come and share the reality about South Africa. The challenges that we face, but also the victories that goes with that. The prize that goes with that. It takes a very strong leadership, a very strong committed movement to go through such tests. And again, our commitment to social justice is being tested. I am not too sure how many of us who would be prepared to suffer on behalf of others. But our history has taught us that sacrifice will be necessary. What we do today, it's not for me, it's not for us, it's not only for this current generation, but also it is for our future generation. Our commitment to social change and justice will always be tested. It is a lesson that I am bringing tonight to the leaders that are here, to activists that are here, that we have to rethink whether or not we have made the right choice to create a better society. A society where everyone is equal, where everyone is treated with respect and dignity, where there is no homelessness, where there is no poverty. And we know what makes our cities rich. The very same homelessness that we see makes these cities rich. It is the responsibility of us all. It is our duty, again, our duty to God and our country, that we bring about change. If we do not begin now, it may be too late. Ladies and gentlemen, just to end my story, obviously, I have been to a number of cities here in the United States. This is my last stop. There's been a lot of learning, so much to take back home. But also, I was worried to see such beauty. You have these beautiful buildings, but they cannot be reconciled to the human needs and life that are there. Again, the beauty of our cities should not be determined by how tall these buildings are, at least by how the city treats its poor of the poorest. The damage that poverty can make is so deep. We know from apartheid era in South Africa, we know how the mindset of the people has been twisted. Some of the successes of our movement has been to create a precious space, a space where everyone is taken seriously, a space where every old gogo, every old mama at home is taken seriously, a space where everyone can laugh, a space where everyone can cry. We have become a basin, very important basin, to collect those tears because they need to come out. None of us know the damage of those tears when they have no fertile ground or basin to be collected. None of us know what happened to those tears when they have to fall inside. We rather create this basin to make sure that there is a good place for each one of us to cry, to laugh, to learn. So we have come up with a living politic, which we make a clear distinction between a party politic and a living politics. Obviously, a party politics will be a politics of election, whereas a living politic is a politic that every uneducated poor person understands, that I have no home, I have no water, I have no electricity, when I do not even need electricity, but my life needs electricity. It's a politics that does not require thick books for clever people to learn, read, but it's a clear politics that God created us to be equal, and we are all the same. That land should be shared. It's so simple. But the other politics comes with other strings. And again, it has not been easy for South Africans, like many poor around the world. The perception in South Africa is that in order to have your voice to be heard, you got to join a particular political party as your token to democracy. Joining a particular political party is the only license for active citizens' participation. We know any democratic state requires active citizen participation. But we have decided to do that outside the state control. And we had to face the consequences of that. It's not easy. It is up to us what kind of a society we want to see. It may be too late by now to think, to begin this thinking. But also it may be too early. So I encourage you all, and I invite you all, to this space so that we do away with individualism. I am here to encourage collectivity. I was sharing with some folks how our movement is formed, how it is important for a member that comes to join our movement that we ask a member, do you have a family? Do you have a neighborhood? Before you take our membership, you got to make sure that your family knows that you have taken such a decision. Your neighborhood should also be invited, because we believe that the struggle is at the neighborhood level. The struggle is not in the offices, in those fancy chairs that are too comfortable for us to see the ground. Sometimes those air conditions, they can make us blind. So we say to comrades that are joining us, make sure that at least you come with 50 members who suffer the very same injustices. It's only when we recognize you as a branch, as a community affiliate to our movement. And when we go to that particular community, we talk to the community about abahlalism, a pride spirit of belonging into this organization. That we are not going to do things for you, but we'll do things with you. We are not going to struggle for you, but we will struggle with you. Because we do not want to create a culture of dependence and individualism. That when you are facing evictions, your leaders and your office do not have all the answers. The answers remains with your brothers and sisters, with you. From the very same beginning, when someone takes a membership, one takes responsibility to take care of their families, their neighborhood, before we can talk about the meaningful activism. So while there's so much, obviously, to talk about the global perspective, it's very important for us. I know there's been so many progressive organizations that I have met, that I am I'm going to continue to meet, the importance of us coming together, the tendency of working in the dark, confined, isolated corner is not going to help any of us. The system that we face is very smart. It is very smart that it is able to encourage individualism. The communal sense and responsibility has been lost. To create a better society needs cadres, leaders who are responsible, who would lead by example. Obviously, none of the members will follow leaders that talk left and walk right. We have to build our profiles at membership level, at leadership level, so that people, when they think of your leadership, they feel like it's good to follow you. What has given me, obviously, the courage that I have, it's the very same old gogos and old babas at home. I remember when I was arrested in 2006, I had to decide the whole night whether or not to continue this fight. It was difficult. But the next morning when I had to appear in court, the court was red. You know those red powerful t-shirts? They changed my mind. When I saw those tears of joy, I thought I was strong enough to continue the fight. Because of the support that I have received, that I continue to receive from the members. Again, we have to review the gap that we have as leaders, between us as leaders and the people that we claim to represent. It is true that none of us as leaders are clever, nor courageous. Members should help leaders to continue their fight. Give them support and courage that they need. Force them to account. And also leadership have to do the same. Once there is a gap, that's how politicians get away. We elect them, then we sit back. So it is the responsibility of us all to make sure that those that we elect, whether at a party political level or at our organizational level, we make no gap between. We will make no mistake in making those gaps because power corrupts. So I want to end my presentation by saying Abahlali baseMjondolo have also asked me to express our sincere gratitude for the support that you have given us during those dark days when we had no one to turn to, when the very same people who are meant to be the custodians of democracy and law are the people who are attacking us because we are organizing outside their control. So I'm not too sure if some of these things do happen here, yeah? But I was told that the police are very harsh on poor. It is the same everywhere, but again, when the poor are organized, they have power. There is a power of organizing outside those big corporates, outside the state control. So it is upon us, where do we future ourselves in making sure that homelessness, poverty, issues of education and health are being dealt with at the same time. They are not separate from each other. We make a mistake when we talk about homelessness in isolation to issues of health, in isolation to job opportunities. And it is sad to see some of the people thinking that it is their fault that they are poor, it is their fault that they are homeless. We all have a responsibility to take. I would request you to try and leave this earth a better place than you have found it. Those were the words of the founder of Boy Scouts, Baden Robert Powell. Leave this earth as a better place than you found it. Thank you so much.